The following is a lecture given by His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj from Srimad Bhagavatam, 6th Canto, 9th Chapter, Text 50, recorded on August 6, 1997 at Kishore Kishori Mandir, Chicago.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Na Veda Ripana Sreya Atmano Guna Vastu Vrit Thasya Tham Uchato Yache Ladi So Pi Tata Vidaha Na Veda Kripana Sreya Atmano Guna Vastu Dre Asya Tham Uchato Yache Yadi sopi tatha vidha Na veda kripana seya
Veda knows Dipana, a miserly living entity, seya, the ultimate necessity, atmanaha, of the soul, Gunavastu Dre, who is attracted by the creation of the modes of material nature, Tasya, of him, Tan, things created by the material energy, Ichata, desiring, Rachet, one bestows yadi if saha api he also tatha vidha of the kind a foolish kripana who does not know his real self interest those who think material assets to be everything or to be the ultimate goal of life are called misers, kripanas. They do not know the ultimate necessity of the soul. Moreover, if one awards that which is desired by such fools, he must also be considered foolish. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. There are two classes of men, namely the Kripana and the Brahman. The Brahman is one who knows Brahman, the absolute truth, and who thus knows his real interest. A Kripana, however, is one who has a material bodily concept of life, not knowing how to utilize his human or demigod life. A kripana is attracted by things created by the material modes of nature. The kripanas who always desire material benefits are foolish, whereas brahmins are always desiring spiritual benefits. They are intelligent. If a kripana, not knowing his self-interest, foolishly asks for something material, one who awards it to him is also foolish. Krishna, however, is not a foolish person. He is supremely intelligent. If someone comes to Krishna asking for material benefits, Krishna does not award him the material things he desires. Instead, the Lord gives him intelligence so that he will forget his material desires and become attached to the Lord's lotus feet. In such cases, although the Kripana offers prayers to Lord Krishna for material things, the Lord takes away whatever material possessions the Kripana has and gives him the sense to become a devotee. As stated by the Lord in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila 2239, Ami Vigya E Murke Vishaya Heni Deva Swacharanamrita Diya Vishaya Vilayva. Since I am very intelligent, why should I give this fool material prosperity? Instead, I shall induce him to take the nectar of the shelter of my lotus feet and make him forget illusory material enjoyment. If one sincerely prays to God for material possessions in exchange for devotional service, the Lord, who is not foolish like such an unintelligent devotee, shows him special favor by taking away whatever material possessions he has and gradually giving him the intelligence to be satisfied only by rendering service to his lotus feet. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments in this regard that if a foolish child requests his mother to give him poison, the mother, being intelligent, will certainly not give him poison even though he requests it. A materialist does not know that to accept material possessions means to accept poison, or the repetition of birth and death. An intelligent person, a Brahmin, aspires for liberation from material bondage. That is the real self-interest of a human being. Srila Prabhupada ki Om Adhyantanidamindasya Yananjana Chalakaya Shakshuru Nikamyena Asmai Sri Guru Devanaka Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Juta Padakamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavanscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahaganadagunapanditam Tam Sajivam Shapaitam Sagadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakandikam Sa Te Krishna Karuna Sindhu Inavandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kamsana Kurangi Sri Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Namami Hari Priya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhupananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasudhi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hari Hari. Those who think material assets to be everything, or to be the ultimate goal of life, are called misers, kripanas. They do not know the ultimate necessity of the soul. Moreover, if one awards that which is desired by such fools, he must also be considered foolish. This beautiful story narrated by Srila Shukadeva Goswami in the sixth canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, includes many profound and essential messages to be understood by those who sincerely want to progress on the path of devotional service. The beginning of this story makes a very great lesson for all of us. Indra, who is the king of heaven, who is a great devotee of the Lord, and who has tremendous power and wealth to facilitate his devotion. He is sitting on his throne beside his blessed wife, Sachi, and he's being worshipped. The Gandharvas, the Apsaras, the Kanaras, they have come together to offer him prayers, to fan him with the chamara, to offer him so many beautiful gifts. And Indra falls under a fatal, like so many do. He was thinking that this is for me. When someone praises you and you believe them, that is the beginning of the end of your spiritual life. A humble person, when he is praised, he thinks, I do not deserve this. This person is just so kind, trying to encourage me. And whatever there is that has any good in me, it is only by the mercy of Krishna. It is only by the mercy of Guru and Vaishnavas. No credit can be mine. But a proud person becomes very elated, thinking, yes, this person has understood properly, and therefore is speaking the truth. Others may not understand so much, but this person is empowered by Krishna to see my glories. Anyways, Indra fell into this trap. And it's a very irresistible trap. All these beautiful, beautiful, intelligent, and heavenly people are dancing for you and singing for you and worshiping you and praising you. When you become proud, the inevitable factor that takes place is you commit offenses. A humble person never commits serious offenses to others. It is simply impossible. Because even if he makes a mistake, it is not considered serious by Krishna or the Vaishnava. Pride cometh before the fall, as they say. So the spiritual master of Indra and all the devatas, Brihaspati, happened to come into that assembly. And Indra did not stand up to greet him. Indra did not make any gesture to welcome his guru, because he was sitting on the high throne. Anyways, as far as Brihaspati was concerned, he just left. Is that the way it happened here? So, Brihaspati knew what is going to be the result of Vaishnava Bhagavad. Indra will lose everything. And sure enough, Indra, when he saw Brihaspati left and he came to his senses, he realized he had just made a terrible mistake. And he began to condemn himself. That just see, all this opulence, all these riches, all this material power has caused me to make an offense. Therefore it is all condemned. It will be better to have nothing and respect Vaishnavas and have the treasure of the Lord's mercy than to have everything in this world, offend Vaishnavas, and lose the Lord's mercy. So he knew he would fall. And sure enough, Indra and all the demigods, they lost all their powers. And when the demons understood, they attacked. And the demigods had to run, flee for their lives. So anyways, it's a very long and wonderful story. But the demigods were told to go to a great Brahmin named Vishwaroop. And Vishwaroop actually made a shield called the Narayana Kavacha for the demigods to wear, by which they could conquer the demons. Now this Vishwaroop, although he did such wonderful service, the demigods were so pleased, Indra was so happy with him. He was very much impartial toward everyone. When he would perform his yajna, he would offer oblations both to the demigods as well as to names of different demons, because they also wanted his favor. So Indra heard of this. And he saw Vishwaroop, who was also like his own Shiksha Guru, when he saw him offering oblations to the demons, Indra became so furious that he cut off Vishwaroop's head. And the father of Vishwaroop, whose name was Plashta, he was furious. Now, this is very interesting. When someone gives you great favors, you're willing to praise them and touch their feet and love them, but as soon as they seem to be doing anything that is not according to your sense gratification, how you can turn against such a person? We should know that actually Indra is a very great soul. We should not make any apparats to Indra either. But somehow or other, the Lord likes to use him to teach us so many incredible examples. So, Indra cut off the head of, first he offended one guru, then he cut off the head of the next. So the father offered yajna, and he wanted to create a personality who would kill Indra. So he chanted a mantra, and the final mantra of oblation, which the demon would come out of the fire, somehow or other, Thrashta pronounced the mantra slightly incorrect. There was supposed to be a short vowel, and he accidentally made one vowel long instead of short. Now, in previous ages, when you perform yajna, you have to make every mantra absolutely perfect, otherwise you'll get an opposite effect of what you're doing the yajna for. It just won't work. The four yugas, in Satya Yuga, the recommended process is one, meditation. I'm sure the Prabhupada explains, what does it mean to meditate? Your life duration is average 100,000 years. It's up to you. And you have to go to a completely secluded place, like the Himalayas. And there you have to fast. You can't go to supermarkets or have anyone cooking for you. You have to just fast. And sometimes take some water or some wild roots to live in the forest. And you have to be completely celibate, without even a thought of sex desire. And you have to sit with your back erect and keep your mind completely fixed on the super soul in your heart, unwavering, for 60,000 years. And then you will get pure devotion. How many people can do that today for even 6 minutes, even 6 seconds? Meditation process that will actually bring one to the real goal of life is simply impossible in this stage of Kali. You may get little peace of mind. You may get little realization of Aham Brahmasmi. But to actually realize the supreme truth of Krishna is impossible. And in Treta Yuga, the process is performing sacrifice. And we see what you have to do to perform sacrifice. Days and days and days, sometimes weeks, of just chanting mantras and offering oblations to the fire. And every mantra must be perfect. If one syllable of one mantra in the whole yajna is incorrect, even if it's supposed to be a long vowel and you accidentally make it a short vowel, or in this case it's supposed to be a short vowel but you accidentally make it too long, then the yajna is spoiled. So who can perform such a yajna? Today, Brahmins, they perform yajna, they have to go to the toilet and everything. Can't even sit there for days at a time. And the mantras, you just don't have no capacity. And Dwapara Yuga, the process of deity worship, you have to perform that system so perfectly, no offense. So clean. Even our best pujaris, sometimes something. Even the surroundings around. You can't even offer the deity pure things these days. In Dwapara Yuga, if you offer the deity anything that's not absolutely pure, fresh, pristine in its quality, then your deity worship. How can you make advancement ultimately only through deity worship? Therefore, in this age of Kali Yuga, there's only one. By the chanting of the holy names of Krishna. Even in this age of Kali, which is an ocean of faults, this is the benediction. That simply by chanting Harinam we can achieve perfection of liberation. And therefore, in all of our yajnas, what principal point is the chanting of the holy names. In our deity worship, with every offering we're chanting the holy names. In our meditation or japa, we're just meditating on the holy name. Everything is centered around the holy name. That is the only sublime process in this age of Kali. Harinama, 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 Eva Kevalam, Kalo Nasteva, 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 Kapir Hanyava. So Trashta meant to chant a mantra which meant, may the enemy of Indra flourish and kill his enemy. But the way he pronounced it actually meant, may Indra, the enemy, flourish and kill his enemy. There's a big difference between the two. So when he offered that oblation, this massive, massive personality just emanated from the fire. He had a huge body and he was growing bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. He was so fearful to look at. And that's the kind of demon he was. And he just started roaring and got all the other demons behind him and they attacked the demigods. And when the demigods saw him coming, they couldn't even look at him. He was so angry and so ferocious and so powerful. He was so big that even though demigods are big people, he was just, with his feet, he was just trampling them to death. Just like you would, like a child would trample on ants. So the demigods saw this powerful demon, they knew this is hopeless. This is the son of Trashta, the great Brahma. So they all ran to Lord Vishnu and began to offer their prayers to Lord. And this is one of the prayers we are reading today. Essentially, they're praying to the Supreme Personality of Godhead to save them. Because after all, their planets, their lives, all their facilities are meant to be used in Krishna's service because they're devoted. Although some of the demigods are attached to the results that they're getting from their service, still, essentially, they're using everything in Krishna's service. They are in charge of supervising various affairs within the universe. For instance, Indra. He's like temple commander of the demigod. He coordinates affairs. And he personally takes care of the rains. He's in charge of the water department of the universe. And he does it on the order of Krishna, in the service of Krishna. If he has no power, if he has no abode, if he has nothing, he can't do his service. So we should be very careful. Srimad Bhagavatam explains, dharamasya sitavargasya natatayapakalpate. Very great danger is when we perform devotional service, Krishna becomes pleased and he gives us so many facilities to use in that service. But if we have something in our mind, and we try to use them for our own personal enjoyment, then we spoil our Krishna consciousness. And this has happened to so many devotees throughout history. The Hare Krishna movement started by Srila Prabhupada. In the beginning, devotees were ready. Prabhupada had nothing. He had nothing to give anyone except love of God, which is the best thing. But he had no material facility. He began in the Bowery. And he was just chanting and bringing people. And somehow, he would get some prasad. Simple. And then 22nd Avenue, he had no money to even cook prasad. They would come in this little broken-down storefront on the Lower East Side of New York, and he would give them kirtan, he would give them Bhagavad Gita katha. And at the beginning, someone would just donate an apple. And however many people were at the class that day, he would just cut the apple in that many pieces and give everyone. He would offer the apple to Krishna and Radharani So he would just distribute little apple pieces to them. That was it. That's all he had to give anyone, material. But because of his compassion, his concern, his profound philosophy, beautiful kirtan, his love for them, people became attracted and wanted to give their lives. And when they came to give their lives, what did they have in return? They were sleeping on a floor, there was no heat in the winter. They had to go out 8, 9, 10, 12 hours a day, going out, distributing some little leaflets, chanting in the streets. But devotees, all the centers were like this. No one came to Krishna consciousness for material benefits. They came for love of God. But because devotees were so sincere, performing so many wonderful austerities, Krishna began to award them with all facilities to make this movement spread throughout the world. Large sums of money started flowing. And beautiful buildings and nice cars and vehicles and buses. And so many devotees were coming. And then devotees became very expert. People who didn't know anything about anything. All of a sudden they were being empowered by Krishna, where they could convince anybody of anything at any time. People would just go to the airports and O'Hare, Field, Chicago. I used to see them. I used to go out with them sometimes. Unbelievable. Nobody could pass by without buying a book. They just had such a power, such a shakti. And then people started collecting funds. Some people were collecting over $1,000 a day. And in this way, people were intelligent. People were able to speak so much philosophy and became very expert managers, expert artists, expert everything. But then, the tendency is, I am very good. You become like Indra. I am a very, very good person. I know how to speak, I know how to paint, I know how to collect, I know how to convince others, I know how to make money, I can do anything. And then the benefits we start using for our own self, rather than just using it all for Krishna. If you use it for Krishna, you're free, you're happy, you're blissful. There's no worries. As soon as you take anything for yourself, all the worries and anxieties of material existence come up. Is it worth it? Never. And then people become lazy, and they lose their taste for chanting, and they lose their taste for hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, and they're not even so much attached to being with devotees anymore. They just become dry and proud. And then what happens is, they fall back into the material ocean of existence. And then what happened? I did so much for Krishna, why? This process must not work. Or maybe the process works. But the devotees are very bad people. They didn't treat me right. In this way, so many excuses to just justify material life again. So this is a great danger. So the demigods here are praying that Krishna's material assets only have value so long as they are for you. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would tell a wonderful story about the bridegroom's journey to the wedding. You all know that story? In India, the custom is that during a marriage ceremony, it is performed with great pomp in the village of the bride. And it goes on for some time, and the bridegroom's whole family, friends, relatives, village, they all go on a procession to the bride's village to have the wedding ceremony. So, the wedding was to begin early the next morning. And in the evening, they came to a big, wide river. And they got on the boat. And it was an overnight drive, overnight journey across the river. So the boatman said, "You rest assured, you just take rest, I will take you across this river." So they all wanted to be fresh for the next morning, so they rested. And they rested, and they rested. And the boatman was rowing and rowing, and it was dark. And he was rowing and rowing. All night long he was rowing. And the next morning, some of the bridegroom's party woke up, and they noticed they were in the exact same spot as where they started the night before. "What happened?" And the boatman said, "No, I'm rowing. I'm just rowing so much. How could we be in the same spot? Nobody could understand." But then someone took notice that they forgot to pull the anchor out of the water. But it was a very serious mistake. So similarly, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains that even though you may be doing so much sadhana, chanting, hearing, even though you might be doing so much enthusiastic service, if you are still maintaining and cultivating your material attachments to this world, it is like an anchor. You get back to nowhere. You have to actually be very conscientiously trying to simplify your life and detach yourself from material enjoyment. And detaching yourself from material enjoyment does not necessarily mean just giving everything away. It means using everything for Krishna. There was one famous musician who came to Prabhupada. He was ready to give up his music. Prabhupada said, "No, Krishna has given you this art. Use it to propagate Krishna consciousness. Use it to propagate Krishna's name." That is real renunciation. Yukta Bhairava. Maharaj Prataparuja was a great king. Soon we're having the Ratiyatra ceremony in this great city of Chicago. And the whole story of Ratiyatra and Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita is very much centered around the illustrious devotional qualities of Maharaj Prataparuja. He was the king of all of Orissa. He had big, big armies and big, big palaces and so much wealth and influence. And his Guru Maharaj, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he became a devotee. And King Prataparuja asked, "Who is this beautiful sannyasi that I hear about that has come to Jagannath Puri?" And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya told him, "He is the Supreme Lord Krishna who has descended." Now Maharaj Prataparuja was a great devotee of Jagannath Swami. So he said to Sarvabhauma, "Please arrange so I can meet with him. I want to have his darshan." So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya went to Lord Chaitanya after he returned from his South Indian tour. And he said there was a great king named Prataparuja alive, and he very much wants to meet you. And Lord Chaitanya became very angry. Sometimes devotees get angry, but for a purpose. Lord Chaitanya said, "If you ever ask me to see this king again, I will leave this place and you will never see me. He is a materialistic person, indulging in materialistic activities, and I am a sannyasi and I cannot meet with him." Kinjanasya Bhagavata Janoma Pasya Param Param Kipamasur Bhavashanga. He said that for one who is in the renounced order of life, for one who is trying to cross over the ocean of birth and death to associate with a materialistic person, too much attached to sex life and material opulence, it is more deadly than drinking poison willingly. Alas. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, but he's a great devotee. He has so much devotion for you. And Lord Chaitanya said, he may be, but the fact that the word king is connected to his name makes him abominable. A sannyasi is like white cloth, and even one spot on that white cloth, the whole world will see it and criticize. And then basically people's faith is destroyed. The Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya became very afraid, and he told Maharaj Pratapa, and he said, if I cannot see the Lord, then I will take my life. I will commit suicide. What is the use of my life? Human life is meant to worship God, to worship Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It's not meant to be a king. If I cannot use my human life for its purpose, then I should not live in this human life. I should give it up. This was his determination. Anyway, Maharaj Prataparudra came with Ramananda Rai to Jagannath Puri from Vijayanagar and Katak. And there, Ramananda Rai came to see Lord Chaitanya. Previously, during Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's South Indian tour, in the place called Vijayanagar, on the banks of the river Godavari, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu met with Ramananda Rai. Have any of you been to that place? Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur placed deities of Lord Chaitanya's footprints at the very spot where Lord Chaitanya and Ramananda Rai sat and discussed topics of Krishna. On the banks of the beautiful sacred river Godavari, the name of the place is Kabur. And it's just across from Rajmundri. And in those days, that area was called Vidyanagar. So after spending these days blissfully talking about the highest subjects of transcendental science, culminating in the conjugal, ecstatic love affairs of Shishi Radha and Krishna, Lord Chaitanya requested Ramananda Rai to give up his government service. He was the governor of the whole state of Madras. Wherever he would go, there would be big, big palanquins carrying him, and there would be hundreds of people chanting hymns and guards. He was a very important person. But he gave it all up. And when he came to Puri, he told Lord Chaitanya, when I asked Maharaj Prataparudra to give me leave for my government service to be with you, Maharaj Prataparudra became ecstatic just to hear your name. He said that you are going to be with Gaurasundar, Lord Chaitanya. I am so sinful, I cannot meet him. But if he's calling for you, then not only do you have my full blessings to take leave, you can have full salary with bonus for the rest of your life. And all you have to do is serve Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Ramananda Rai said that this devotee, Prataparudra Maharaj, when he heard your name, he just began to cry and his limbs began to tremble, such ecstasy. I wish I had such love of God. I don't even have a drop of the devotion he has. And Lord Chaitanya responded to Sri Ramananda Rai. And he said, you are the best devotee, Ramananda. And as far as this Maharaj Prataparudra, because he has gone out of his way to serve you, Because he has made this sacrifice to please you, Krishna will certainly be merciful to you. But anyways, the Lord still wasn't going to see Ramananda Raj, I mean, Maharaj Pratapa Rudra. So he requested in many ways that the devotees were afraid to even approach Lord Chaitanya. So he sent a note to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. And Sarvabhauma gave this note to Nityananda Prabhu and the other devotees. And what did it say? The king said, if the Lord has descended to this world to give his mercy to even the most sinful fallen, he's given it to everyone except one most unfortunate person named Pratapa Rudra. He's the only one who will not get the Lord's mercy. Therefore, if being a king is interfering with my pleasing Krishna, I will become a beggar. I will give up my beautiful robes and I will wear tattered, discarded cloth. I will give up my fine foods and I will just fast. And I will go house to house as a beggar. I will give up everything, even my family, to become a beggar, if that's what is required. And when the devotees heard this, Dhritavrata, this firm determination, they were struck with wonder. They understood that very soon he was going to get the mercy of the Lord. So Maharaj Pratapa had everything, and he was willing to give it all up. But the devotees sent him a message, please do not give it up. Because he was such a good king, and they wanted him to stay the king. They wanted him to use his palace, use his wealth, use everything in Krishna's service. Not to artificially just give it all up and be a beggar. That is not the highest way. So the devotees convinced him to stay in his position. And during the wonderful Ratha Yatra festival, Lord Chaitanya saw Maharaj Pratapa Rudra taking the role of a street sweeper. Very menial service, and sweeping the street with a golden broom. And when Lord Chaitanya saw this, he thought, his heart melted. Such a big position, taking such a menial service for the Lord and his devotees, he will get the mercy of Krishna. And one time during Ratha Yatra, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was dancing in such transcendental ecstasy that he fell down. Nobody was around except Maharaj Pratapa Rudra. And Maharaj Pratapa Rudra went to catch him. And Lord Chaitanya came through his external consciousness and saw himself in the arms of the king. And he said, how condemned I am to be touched by a materialist. And Maharaj Pratapa Rudra felt very bad. But the devotees told him, actually, Lord Chaitanya is very happy with you internally, but externally he wants to set an example that one in the renounced order cannot be close with materialistic people. Anyways, in the garden near the Gundicha temple, with the blessings and the guidance of the Vaishnavas, headed by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya Ramananda Rai, he entered the garden disguised himself as a simple Vaishnava. And he chanted beautiful prayers, Tavakatana Padana Tapta Jivanam. Prayers that the gopis prayed in separation from Krishna when he left them during the Rasa Leela. And he was massaging Lord Chaitanya's feet and his legs. And when Lord Chaitanya heard these prayers chanted with such devotion, he got up again and again and was embracing Maharaj bathing him with his tears of love for him. In this way, all of his desires were fulfilled. So he remained as king. But how did he use his fortune? It describes when Lord Chaitanya decided to go to Vrindavan. The first time he was going to Vrindavan, many of his associates were going with him. And Maharaj Pratapa Rudra, when he heard Lord Chaitanya is going to Vrindavan, he just ordered all of his ministers and servants in the kingdom. You just take everything from the treasury of the state and use it for Lord Chaitanya. He said every time he gets to a river, at every river, there should be beautiful boats so that there's no inconvenience to take Lord Chaitanya and all of his devotees across the rivers. Construct brand new, beautiful, kingly, royal boats. And have them stocked with prasad, luscious prasad. And as he's walking, three times per day, or whatever, at certain intervals, we should have places for him to rest, beautiful, beautiful facilities. And we should have glorious, opulent feasts of prasad for Lord and all his devotees. And we should have guards to protect them. He was making these arrangements throughout his whole kingdom, from Jagannath Puri to the border of Orissa. And sure enough, everywhere Lord Chaitanya and his devotees and associates would go, there was just wonderful facilities erected, wonderful prasad being given, and beautiful boats to take them across all the rivers. In this way, Maharaj Pratapa used his power as a king simply for the pleasure of the Lord. And the Lord was so satisfied, and the devotees were just showering their blessings on the king. It was such a great soul. So this is the ultimate perfection of love. So the demigods here in this beautiful, beautiful verse, they are explaining that one who aspires to get material assets, thinking that possessing things and enjoying things is the goal of life, they are called kripanas, misers. And one who gives such material facilities is just as much of a fool as the person asking for them. And Srila Prabhupada, this glorious purport, is putting tremendous emphasis on the nature of Krishna's mercy to his devotees. In India especially, sometimes people are very afraid of worshipping Krishna because they know what he's like. If you worship Ganesh, Ganapati, he's obliged. You do the proper yajna, you do the proper puja, you offer the proper prayers. He must give you what you ask for if you do it properly. And same with the Durga Devi, Kali Mata. You do the proper puja, they will give you what you want. You want mystic powers, they will give it to you. You want all kinds of opulences through yoga, they will give it to you. You want money, fame, wealth, education, they will give. Some worship Shiva, Rama, even demons. We're reading about Dhritarasana. There was another demon named Dhritarasana. He worshipped Shiva. He was cutting his flesh out of his body and putting it in fire. Om Namah Shivaya. Shiva didn't come. More flesh. Om Namah Shivaya. He was just cutting all his flesh out. Blood. Finally, he decided, I will just cut off my head. So he actually was ready to cut off his head and put it in. Shiva came and said, all right, what do you want? Whoever's head I touch will crack in 1,000 pieces. Shiva is an expansion of Vishnu himself. But in his role of Shiva within this world, he takes the post of a demigod. That means if you do the yajna, he must give you, even if it's the worst thing for you. He gave Ravana so much power that anyone who cuts his heads off comes back. Rama gave Hiranyakashipu so many that even though they were the worst thing for them, the demigods cannot refuse you if you just pay the price. Jesus said, all right, you have the benediction. Whoever's head you touch will crack into 1,000 pieces. Rishi, but he's Vaishnavanam Yata Shambhu. He's personally always meditating on Krishna and Sri Radharani's lotus feet. But he's given these crazy benedictions. That is his duty to Krishna, to give what people want. Also in the mode of ignorance, especially. If you worship Shiva for love of God, he'll give you love of God. If you worship him to crack people's heads, he'll give you head-cracking powers. So anyways, Vrikasura became very, very infatuated by Parvati. So he decided to crack Shiva's head. So he went chasing after him like this. And Shiva was running and running and running. All over the universe there was this chase going on. But Krishna always protects his devotees. So he disguised himself as a little boy and said to Vrikasura, "What are you doing?" He said, "I'm going to crack Shiva's head. I have the benediction and I will get Parvati for my wife." The little Brahmin boy said, You are not intelligent. Everyone will laugh at you because Shiva's benedictions, they don't work. I've seen. You'll touch his head, nothing will happen, everyone will laugh at you. And what's worse than disgrace? So you should test it, Mom. You should test this benediction before you go chasing up Krishna. And the best way to test it is just touch your own head and see if it works. But he spoke in such tricky language that he touched his own head and it worked. Ah, Hare Krishna. He was dead. Shiva was saved. But Krishna, he's not like that. Krishna's abhigya, swaraj. He's all-knowing. He knows what's good. Take everything away. Krishna said to Yudhishthira Maharaj, "Yasya hamana vrinnami harishin tattanam shana." That when I'm kind to someone, I give them what they want. But when I give the supreme installment of my real mercy, I take everything away so that that devotee has no one and nothing to turn to except me. Reciprocate and give that person myself. The husband of the goddess of fortune becomes your property when you have no desire for anything or anyone else. So there is a very good lesson that when you pray to the Supreme Lord Krishna, to be very, very thoughtful about your prayers. You should pray for the right thing. And what is the right thing? Devotion. Humility. Purity of heart. Offenseless chanting of the holy name. And most of all, service to Vaishnavas. The great souls, this is the only prayer that they have. During Mahaprakash at Srivas's house, when the Lord asked Haridas Thakur, "Any benediction you want, I give to you. Anything." What did he want? He said, "Let me just have, in every birth I take, let me get the remnants from the food of your devotees' plates of prasad." That's it. Let me be an insect in the house of a devotee, so that if any scraps of his food come, I will always be able to eat it and worship that devotee. To be the servant of the servant of the Vaishnava, that's the only thing he wanted. He said, "The hours in Pandaragur, very nice place." And the guru of the whole Sampradaya, the Bhakti Sampradaya, was telling me one beautiful prayer. I told him the story of Haridas Thakur. And he started to cry. And he said, "Our saint, Tukaram, he offered a beautiful agama, or a beautiful prayer, similar." And he chanted it to him in the Marathi language. And then he gave an explanation. He said, "Tukaram is saying, I do not want wealth. I do not want beautiful women. I do not want power, fame, followers. I don't even want elevation to Vaikuntha. I only want one benediction, that I could become a tiny little insect in the bathroom of your devotee. Hare Krishna. Is that your prayer? And then Tukaram explained why he wanted to be an insect in the bathroom of a devotee. Because when the devotee takes his bath, the water falls off his body onto his feet. And then after coming off the feet, it goes on the floor. And then the insect could secretly come and drink that water that has washed the feet of the devotee. That is the only benediction. These are the great souls. This is Kolavecha Sridhar was poverty stricken. He was emaciated from hunger. He was living in a house that wasn't even a house. His clothes wore holes in it, patched up, and there was clothes. And Lord Chaitanya offered him any benediction. Prabhupada says, he only wanted one thing. Let me in every birth be the servant of the servant of your servants, and always let me remember you in your beautiful form of Nimai Pandit. This is the real treasure we should aspire for. And whatever else we have, we should use it to achieve that treasure, the everlasting treasure of bhakti. We should not be distracted. And whatever Krishna gives us, we use it in such a way that we can best sustain our service to the Lord. If we're family, we should have what's best appropriate to raise our children in Krishna consciousness and help the great mission of the Lord. If we're brahmacharis, we shouldn't have anything. We should just chant Hare Krishna, do our service, and be blissful, happy. One of my dear godbrothers was recently, now he's a very successful grihastha. He has lots of money, big house, and he has a big, big position in society and all kinds of awards for his service. And he chants around, he's a good preacher, he does everything. It's all exemplary. But he was telling me, you know something? I just remember when I was a brahmachari, living in the ashram, sleeping on the floor, nothing, having nothing but service. No possession but with the holy name and service. He said, those are the best days of my life. He said, the only thing that keeps me going in my Krishna consciousness now is the remembrance of those sweet, simple days of just chanting and being happy. But if you can't just chant and be happy like that, then you should be a grihastha and be very responsible, and you'll achieve the same goal of going back to home, back to God, by keeping Krishna in the center. So here the devatas, they have so much, and they've been through so many experiences and good lessons, and they are teaching all of us through these prayers. Those who think of material assets to be everything or to be the ultimate goal of life are misers. Therefore, they are worshipping Lord Vishnu. Actually, in one sense, they're asking him for material benefits. But still, they want to use them in Krishna's service. So just to briefly complete the story, Vishnu tells them that Indra, there was a great sage named Dadichi. And this Dadichi, if you can convince him to die, and then you take the bones from his body and make them into a thunderbolt, with that weapon you will kill Vritrasura. So the demigods were very inspired to hear this, and they went to Dadichi and started preaching to him. You know, Dadichi, the greatest service one could do is give up his life for the benefit of others. So we request you to give up your life so we can use your bones to make a thunderbolt. Rishi was looking at the demigods. They were so anxious to sustain their life, they wanted him to give up his life. He said, how can you ask me to do that? Everyone knows to maintain your body is the source of all pleasure and prosperity in the world. What can you enjoy without a body? The demigod started preaching, no, this body is temporary, you shouldn't be attached, you should do something good for the world. So Dadichi started to laugh. He said, I was only testing you. So then he went into meditation and he left his body. Such a great sacrifice. Because he did this, he's famous and worshipped as a model of Krishna consciousness for all time to come. He was willing to give up his body in a moment if that what was for the best interest of other living beings. That is selfless compassion. By chanting various mantras, they took his bones and made a thunderbolt weapon. And then Indra boarded his beautiful elephant carrier, Airavata, and led the demigods into a march toward Vritrasura and the demons. And when they started fighting with the demons, and the demigods had tremendous power, and they were defeating all the demons, and Vritrasura was just watching. And then he saw all the demons running away. And Vritrasura was disgusted. What is this? They're running away. He said, a warrior will never turn his back to the enemy. You're cowards, you're fools running away. It's better to fight and die than to run away and be a disgrace. But the demons were so much being pounded by the demigods that they just couldn't even hear Vritrasura's words. They just ran away. So then Vritrasura decided, all right, I will fight. Rah, he started roaring. And he just started stepping on the demigods' heads and crushing them with his feet hundreds of a time. And the demigods didn't know what to do. They were just being crushed like insects. And they all started running away. So Vritrasura started chastising them for being cowards. And Indra, he came with his thunderbolt. And when he saw Vritrasura, it was very difficult. And he threw his thunderbolt. And Vritrasura just caught it and threw it back. And knocked Airavata to the ground. Airavata started vomiting blood. And Indra was thinking, my weapon doesn't work. It's hopeless. And he just gave up and accepted defeat. And then Vritrasura started preaching to him. He said, what are you, Impa? You're meant to kill me. Fight. Why you're such a coward? Why you're so attached to your material life? I'm not attached. I only have one attachment to the lotus feet. He said, I have come to this battlefield only for one purpose, to be killed by you. You're attached to your material life. You're fighting to get your kingdom back. I'm come to go back to Godhead. You can have your kingdom. You can have all these things in this world. It's all an illusion. My meditation is just to go back to the spiritual world, Krishna. So I will fight you out of duty, but it is the arrangement of the Lord. You are to kill me. And I'm Krishna's devotee. You shouldn't be attached to anything of this world. You should only be attached to hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord. As far as I am concerned, my only desire in life is to serve the Lord's devotees. I want to follow in the footsteps of the great souls and be in that place where I can always be engaged in getting the dust from the feet of the Vaishnavas, serving them and thus pleasing the Lord. Vritrasura was a Mahabhagavata. He was a Paramhamsa. He was a great Acharya in the form of a demon. And then he told Indra, this is how you have to kill me. You have to cut off my head. Anyways, it's a long story, but ultimately Vritrasura swallowed Indra. And then he went into samadhi. He started meditating on Krishna. And like that. And he Indra had to somehow or other cut his head off. It took him one full year to cut his head off with his thunderbolt. This prophet says, when you're in samadhi, sometimes your neck becomes very stiff. And that's how big he was. And Vitrasura was just completely engrossed in meditating on the lotus feet of Krishna. And then he went back home, back to God. So it's asked, Parikshit Maharaj asked Shukadeva Goswami, I believe, why this Vitrasura was such a great devotee preaching, and he was in the body of a demon. And then he was explained in his previous life, he was Maharaj Chitraketu. And that's a wonderful story which you will be reading. After some time, since you have bothered them. Thank you very much. Is there any questions? Yes, I got something about that. Why did Brihaspati hide himself and not allow Indra to beg forgiveness? Because he wanted to teach him a good lesson. That is the business of the spiritual master. He didn't want to let him off easy. Otherwise he wouldn't have really learned his lesson. Why does Krishna punish us for reaction to our sins? Sometimes he punishes us in ways that are very painful. Krishna, he could make us so in perfect, vibrant health, and everything goes our way, and we never get arrested on Sankirtan. And everything's so nice, the weather's always, Krishna can make it so it's always 72 degrees in Chicago throughout the winter, so we can do our service nicely. Why does Krishna put us through sufferings and miseries, sometimes ill health, and sometimes disasters in our life, and sometimes everything goes wrong? Actually, nothing ever really goes wrong if we're trying to do our service, because Krishna wants to teach us good lessons that will go to our heart and that we will not forget. And this is what we sometimes have to go through. So the spiritual master is representative of Krishna. And he knew what Indra needs. Indra needed to lose everything. If he just, Brihaspati, I'm sorry. And Brihaspati said, oh, so be it. Then he would get back in his throne, and the next week Brihaspati would come in, and Indra would probably do the same thing. And then he would come to, oh, I'm so sorry. So he hid. Because he knew if Indra approached him, he would have to give forgiveness. So he hid. Just so Indra would have to suffer the reaction, so his false pride would be smashed to pieces. And he would learn a good lesson and not do it again. But that was his mercy. He knew it was the Lord's will. Also, if it wasn't for Brihaspati hiding, we wouldn't be able to tell this wonderful story about Vritasura. So, everything works out good when we just have faith in the discrimination of the great soul. That answers the question. So, any other questions? Yes? Krishna's mercy is inconceivable. He's asking, sometimes devotees, they want nice husband, and then they get nice husband, and then they hardly do any service. Yes? Or they ask for a nice house, and then they get nice house, and then they become lazy. Something like that. So, Krishna will give you what's best for you according to your sincerity. But you have to learn to use it properly. There are also good lessons to be learned by that. Therefore, Krishna says his supreme mercy is when he puts you in a situation where you have nothing except Krishna to help you and save you. And his other kinds of mercy is he may give you whatever you want and give you the independence to use it properly or improperly. If you use it improperly, you'll learn terrible lessons. Good lessons, but terrible sufferings through it. And if you use it properly, you'll be great service. So we should be very careful. If Krishna gives you something wonderful, he's giving you the facility to do something wonderful, but you always have your independence. Do you understand? He's not giving it to you to fall down, he's giving it to you to use. But you have your choice whether you want to fall down with it or use it for bhakti. So he's giving you a free choice. But ultimately, when you misuse it, when you're misusing it, somehow or other, if you are very sincere in your heart that you're misusing these things, then Krishna will just take it all the way. So the reminder of Krishna's saved. So we shouldn't make Krishna do that. If Krishna gives us something wonderful, we should use it in a wonderful way. And he doesn't have to take it away and make us suffer. But he gives us something wonderful to be used in a wonderful way, but we use it in a different way, we become differently attached. And beware, Krishna is the supreme Lord. And he knows supremely how to bring you to the humble position of crying out his holy name helplessly. So, with whatever we have, let us use it in his service and cry the holy name helplessly. Cultivate that sentiment, even now. Otherwise, it's just a matter of time. Give us all you have. One of our God sisters, amazing personality. She was at New Vrindavan when I first came there. And she was just a really nice, hard-working lady, doing so much nice service. And so many things happened. She had two children. They were not treated properly in the Gurukula. And her husband kind of went crazy. He was not a very responsible person, with all respects to him, to his family. And she was basically such a nice devotee, but she just realized that I have to somehow or other make it in this world economically. And she started making all these plans and putting the priority of all of her energies into economic development. Somehow making money. Somehow or other providing for her children. So many things like that. And that was her full life practically. She went back to her native place in Idaho, northern Idaho or something. And she was just raising money, getting jobs, doing things like this, making a nice material situation, something she didn't do in years. She was always just surrendering. She was doing this for years, and then she got cancer. Terrible cancer. Within a matter of months, she was paralyzed practically. And the doctor said she had practically, just a few months to live at the most. But it was such an advanced case when it first appeared. And she can't walk. She's just laying in bed. She's in terrible, terrible physical pain. She's going to die anytime. And she called me on the phone just recently. And she was in bliss. She was so happy. She told me that I have all Prabhupada's books right here. And I'm just chanting 64 rounds and reading Prabhupada's books all day and night. I've never heard Prabhupada so clearly through his books as now. Every word that he speaks, I'm so receptive that it's just enlightening my heart. She said, I do not feel like I'm on my deathbed. My bed has been transformed to the bank of the Ganges. And like Maharaj Pariksha hearing Shukadeva Goswami, I'm just sitting here listening to Srila Prabhupada preach to me by reading his books. She said, the holy name has never vibrantly manifested in my heart as much as now. She said, I am so happy. I would not exchange the condition I'm in for any other situation in the whole universe. She said, I've never felt Guru and Krishna's mercy so closely in my life. And she's paralyzed from waist down. She's in so much, the doctor said, this kind of cancer, so much pain. She can't eat hardly. She's just chanting and hearing. And she told me on the phone that there's a fair in a city close to where I'm living in Idaho. And I'm trying to convince this family to take me in a stretcher to that fair to distribute Prabhupada's books. She said, because I'm getting so much nectar and hope, and I'm getting so much spiritual rejuvenation from these books, I just want to share them and give them to the whole world. She said, but I don't think they'll take me. She can't even lift her arms practically. She just wanted to go to the fair and distribute books. She's happy. And then she told me that I was thinking that I should just spend so many years of my life making arrangements for money. And Krishna is so kind, he just took me out of that consciousness. And now all I'm doing is just, Krishna, I'm yours. You will provide for my family. You will provide. All I have to do is surrender to you. There's nothing else you're giving me in life except your lotus feet. You've taken everything away in this entire creation except your lotus feet. And therefore, I am the most fortunate. And I thank you so much. And do you know what this God sister's name is? In 1972, Srila Prabhupada initiated. And Prabhupada knows. He knows the heart of each devotee. Then she was in perfect health. Her name is Kunti Devi Dasi. Kunti prayed, Vipada Shanti Pashashvatat Vatakrajagatku. But let calamities come again and again, because in the face of those calamities I see you, Krishna. I have nowhere else to turn. Is truly a genuine embodiment of Kunti Devi Dasi, servant of Kunti, following in the footsteps of Kunti. Can I ask you a question? One more question? Yes. All right, two more questions. You cannot be partial in such a... Huh? You may go.
Thank you.
should not be what?
We should not be inattentive.
Inattentive for a moment. We should try very earnestly to always be attentive that what we're doing is for Krishna. Srila Rupa Goswami has said that even in the most ordinary activities of our day, we should be very attentive and conscious to do it as good as we possibly can. Because whatever we do is an offering to Krishna. If you're brushing your teeth, you're doing it for Krishna. So you should do it first class. If you're putting on your dhoti or your sari, you're doing it for Krishna. So you should do it with that in mind and do it nicely. If you're sweeping the floor, if you're doing cooking, every word we speak, we should be very conscientious that this word that I speak is going to be productive to myself and others to come closer to Krishna. And in order to maintain an awareness by which we can aspire in this way, we have to hear Srimad Bhagavatam very carefully every day. We have to read Bhagavad Gita, come to classes, study Srila Prabhupada's books. They constantly remind us of how we must be attentive, or Krishna conscious. Not Krishna unconscious, but Krishna conscious at all times. So if we have good sadhana, we're chanting our 16 lines as careful as possible every day, and we're reading Srila Prabhupada's books, and we're humbly trying to perform our service in a nice way, then Krishna will help us. Man helps those who help themselves. God helps those who help themselves. So we should aspire to be very conscientious and attentive.